Hi, welcome to the next talk from Alexander Schwarz. He's one of the Keycloak maintainers working for Red Hat and will tell us something about what happened in the last release of Keycloak. Have fun.
Thank you for the introduction and welcome to this talk here at Fostem at the Sunday afternoon. I'm one of the Keycloak maintainers. I'm working for Red Hat. There are several other maintainers, some of the maintainers working for other companies as well. So we are a very diverse community here. So, and this is all about Keycloak. So what's new in Keycloak, both in the upcoming release, also in the last two releases. But first, let's clarify what is actually an identity in access management and do I need one? So it's all about authenticating, authorizing, and also managing the users that then eventually want to access your services. So you have people logging in to Keycloak first with their credentials. It might be username and password. It might be a key. It might be a TLS, MTLS they're using to log in. Somehow they authenticate with Keycloak, and then they will get a token. This token is then sent to the services, and the users then the services can then find out who authenticated in the first place, and figure out also what roles, what permissions they have. And QQ will enable you to have all the user management, password handling, password reset, user registration, integrating existing infrastructure in there. All that's handled by Keycloak, and you don't need to handle that in your services. That's the idea around that. And I'm happy to answer also questions during the talk. Just raise your hand and ask your question, and I will repeat it for the stream as well. So Keycloak is open source, and it's an identity and access management solution. It's been, well, the initial commit was a little bit more than 10 years ago. It's now, well, since April 2023, part of the Cloud Computing, Cloud Native Computing Foundation, CNCF, which is then part of the Linux Foundation. So it's vendor-neutral organization that's taking care of Keycloak here. Red Hat is still contributing lots of code and person hours to that project, so it can serve people's need, and we get a lot of contributions from the community. It's Apache licensed, and as of today, it has 21,000 stars on GitHub. So Keycloak in the beginning, more than 10 years ago, it was all about, well, getting a login screen there for users and handling those user credentials. And the first thing, it's been implementing OpenID Connect, which was new at the time. Services around, how to store information about users and clients and identities into a database, a REST API. And it was built from developers for developers. That's still true with today's Keycloak, I believe, as well. So that you, if you're a developer, find great ways of integrating it with your applications. Soon after the initial OpenID Connect implementation, there were things like multi-factor, OTPs, for example, that you could add there. Client libraries, at the very beginning, there weren't so many OpenID Connect client libraries, especially in the Java world, where Keycloak then shipped its own client libraries, implementing the standard. And then there was SAML, there was LDAP, all the things you can integrate into Keycloak. And so over time, while it grew, both in GitHub Stars and also, while the other screen is unfortunately not visible here, but also in the Google Trend for the keyword Keycloak that everybody can now look up on Google, which is a nice search engine trend here. So yeah, a lot of people using it to secure their applications. And usually there's kind of a journey that you go through when you're using Keycloak. Day zero, you started as a developer, running it probably locally. Then you add single sign-on for a single application, maybe, or two or three. And then you discover all the features. That becomes more flexible in your setup, and then you really use all the features to eliminate the daily churn that you have in your IT department around user handling. Starting as a developer, you run a single container, for example, inside or outside Kubernetes, or extract an archive. It works well with test containers, so you can run your, if you're testing your applications, you can spin up a test instance of KeyCloak to test all these interactions there. And you can configure it using a command line interface, using its REST API, a web UI, or you can export and import a realm, which basically summarizes all the configurations about an instance, and use that for identical environments. So it's, I'd say it really makes sense if you want to have your user management done properly for a single application to choose something like KeyCloak for that. So a Docker run command, for example, you define a container, define a port where it should listen to, and give it an initial admin password, which you then change after you first logged into KeyCloak, but there need to be some initial user name and password, and that's what you can pass on the command line. If you don't pass it on the command line, the console will prompt you for the username and password if you come from a local host. You can also start at a bit extended command line where you then see that you have a folder where you can put in a JSON with a realm that will be imported on startup. So that makes a lot of sense in development environments to have a common configuration that is similar to your production environment, and then you can test your application locally. So if you used versions of KeyCloak before 19, it was part of the, there was a Wildfly distribution there. Now it's based on Quarkus, but in Quarkus you have like four main start commands to start KeyCloak. One is for development mode, where you don't need a DLS certificate. There's the start mode, where we ask you to really deploy KeyCloak with a DLS certificate, because it's a best practice. It's also better runtime performance. The start command takes, depending on what machine you're running it, like 10 seconds to start a KeyCloak instance. But there's also a preparation phase, or called a build or re-augmentation phase, that you can start up separately with the build command. So that would take 5 seconds, and then the start optimized will only take 5 seconds to start up KeyCloak. And then it will like discover other nodes, will connect to the database, all these things are part of these 5 seconds before it will be able to take the first requests from users. Day one, single sign-on is cool, so your users need to remember only one password for one or more applications. They authenticate only once a day, or maybe even once a month, or once every 3 months. So I've seen people working in e-commerce, especially they have a very long session length, so people, are always logged in to press this button buy and put them to your basket. And so yeah, so then, yeah, that's nice to see. Every industry is different on those things. And then you add a second factor for security, obviously not if you're in e-commerce, but and then you add a theme, right? Also, when you on day one, you want to have your company logo, your company colors to the login screen, and then you say, this is KeyCloak, but it now looks like our company logo. So that's what you do on day one on KeyCloak, and I say it makes really sense to do that with a single application that you want to secure. This is first contact with KeyCloak, login screen, still username and password, nothing else here. And then it has this admin UI where you can, for example, configure the realm to say, yes, I want to have user registration enabled, yes or no, forgot password, yes or no, all these things you can configure on a realm basis, how you want to configure emails to be sent out, localization, lots of things to discover and configure. But that's for the admins. There's another UI for the users that can then manage their credentials, add a second factor here, change their name, change their email address if you choose to do so. That's then for users. User self-management comes with KeyCloak. And for example, if you like running things in Kubernetes, there's a custom resource where you can have the configuration deployed as a custom resource, and then an operator that picks it up and configures your pods and deploys it to Kubernetes with its best practices. If you don't choose, they have REST APIs, CLIs, export import of realms, all these things to enable things in a pipeline that like spins up KeyCloak just for testing during a CI run. Day two is then becoming more flexible in your setup. You want to integrate things like LDAP or Kerberos, things that are common in enterprises for a long time. You want to brokerage to existing SAML services because your applications only talk OpenID Connect. And if there's another SAML service where people authenticate, you can use Keycloak to translate. You might even use Keycloak to translate an existing OIDC service to Keycloak's OIDC service because maybe you don't like the token that are created by the other OIDC services. They're missing some information. You want to add something or remove something. Use Keycloak for that. Or you have a customer database with usernames, credentials, and some kind of database, maybe a legacy application, maybe something bought from another company. Just write your own integration, write a few lines of Java code, and integrate that custom store into Keycloak and make use of all these credentials and user data already stored in that database. There are extensions for SCIM. They're not delivered part of Keycloak. So this is how you reuse all your existing security infrastructure and integrate it into Keycloak. As I said, brokerage, Kerberos, SAML, OpenID Connect. If you integrate Kerberos, nobody will see Keycloak, at least if they logged into Kerberos in the first place. So there will be no login screen unless Kerberos doesn't work for that user, and then there will be the fallback of the regular login screen. If you then add other providers, you can log in using GitHub, Google, or others, and integrate with OpenLDAP, Active Directory, or custom user stores. A lot of customizations besides the login schemes are that you can configure the login flows, you can add required actions, for example, confirm some terms and conditions during the login flow, asks for some more additional information about the customer if they want to access a special application. You can create event listeners. You can write your own mappers to map information, for example, to LDAP in a custom way to the tokens or use information endpoints. You can connect any custom storage, as I said. So that's all there. And if you integrated it, and in day three you want to really eliminate this churn, you have these user required actions, for example, you've been writing people emails, they should enable second factor because they have maybe, I don't know, are almost admins or real admins in the company. You wrote them emails, they didn't do it, so you add a required action. Next time you log in, you will need to require a second factor to configure before you are allowed to continue. That's one of these required actions that you can put in there. Or changing your password, you can have password recovery. So if users forget their password, they shouldn't call you in IT, but just use password recovery using the email flow. Even if you store the users in LDAP, you will be able to reset those passwords using the Keycloak workflow there. You can have self-registration for users, user data self-management, and hopefully this will resolve the need for calls and tickets around these areas of daily churn that you have in the IT. Right, so that's Keycloak. And this is then, if you enable these options, you will have a forgot password link here, new user register button there. So it's all part of the theme, and then you toggle things on and off as needed. Required actions flow, some I mentioned, updating the profile, verifying emails, so if that Keycloak will send out an email with a link people need to click on, and then the email is verified, and Keycloak will check that when people log in the required actions, and also you can choose to enable pass keys for Keycloak as well. And again, that's something you can extend with some Java code in Keycloak as an extension. So that's a typical Keycloak journey, I'd say. You start on a local machine developing something, you tell people Singleton is cool and add more applications. You add more security infrastructure that already exists, like LDAP or Kerberos, and then eliminate some daily churn with all the user handling that's part of Keycloak already. So, Keycloak is an open source identity and access management solution for, what I've said before, authenticating, authorizing users, configure it interactively or fully automated, have a bridge to existing infrastructures, extend and customize it as needed, and run at scale in cloud and non-cloud environments. Right. We support both Kubernetes deployments with an operator and bare metal deployments. You unzip a file or a tar on Tor Tor, and then you're done installing it there. There's a book out. The first edition of the book was still the Wildfly distribution, and now Keycloak second edition is out. It's based on Keycloak 22 and Quarkus. For those who want to get up to date, you can browse through the book and update you on the latest of Keycloak if you used, especially if you used the Wildfly distributions before. So let's get to the highlights of the versions. So after these 15-minute introduction, and please do ask questions around these features. We can go as deep as my knowledge takes me. and that's a good thing that you're here live at the conference, that you're asking the questions. I don't know if the internet can also ask the questions. They can't. Okay, so you have the power to ask all the questions the people out there might have. So please be inventive. Okay. So the passkey support is evolving already in Keycloak 24. So if you, it's not there enabled by default. So you need to start it with a command line flag features passkeys. Load shedding and onboarding probes. I have a slide for that that I will show in a minute because we did a lot of chaos testing for Keycloak 24. We did a lot of improvements there. Multi-site support is there, so you can deploy Keycloak into separate. Well, what we tested was one AWS region with multiple availability zones, in each availability zone having a separate Kubernetes cluster and so connecting those. So one cluster can go down and the other will take over. We have a sizing guide, so if you're wondering if I have that many users logging in per second, that many of refresh tokens sent back and forth, how much CPU do I need? How much memory do I need? All this is now part of a sizing guide that gives you initial good guess, I'd say, that we also test in our Keycloak benchmark project. And in the Keycloak benchmark project, we also provide you with Gatling tests that you can run in your own environment, basically saying this number of users should log in concurrently, and then you will be able to get the sizing guide, get some initial numbers, run some tests, see if your environment matches our environment, and then either raise them or lower them a bit, the numbers that we provide in the sizing guide. So that's what we have in Keycloak benchmark since Keycloak 24. Keycloak 24 was then also upgrading to Quarkus 3.8, Quarkus being, let's say, the foundation that provides Java EE foundations that Keycloak builds on top of. And declarative user profile is in there. I will also show that in a second. Questions so far about this? And trust store handling was simplified. Before you were supposed to prepare a Java key store. Now we can just put all the certificates into a folder and Keycloak will do the magic of combining all those, which makes it a lot simpler to deploy. The admin UI, there's also an experimental option that you can write extensions to extend the admin UI. So that's something, that's very experimental for now. People start using it. It's been getting better and better the more feedback we get from the community. And that's the important things about these experimental features that we want to get the feedback. So as we were testing this high availability for Keycloak 24, with a lot of load testing. So what happens if I put my Keycloak under a load that it can't handle anymore, right? So, and the idea is, well, it should be well behaving, whatever that is, even if the system receives more load than it can handle. So not well behaving would be, it would crash. Maybe a lot of requests queue up, they are delayed, the clients time out. And the behavior we now both documented and tested and optimized for is that you can set a limit of requests you want to queue, and then those excessive requests will fail fast. So they will get an answer 503, I believe. Yeah. So they will be the client will know something failed, but it will get the answer immediately and not like after a minute or two. And then you wouldn't be able to taking up so much resources, especially if you're using lots of resources, it might get to a situation where you're then over the limits of your container and the Kiklo restarts. That's something you don't want to do. Also, the liveness probes of Keycloak, before they were having some blocking threads in there or blocking operations in there, and you would see if you overload Keycloak that it will restart in Kubernetes. So because the liveness probes, that lot of requests coming in, the liveness probe will also be blocked. And once Keycloak, once Kubernetes waits for Keycloak's liveness probe for a minute or two, well, by that time the pod is going to be restarted and you will not have so much fun, and you will get cycling restarts, maybe the whole system will tip, which is not what you want to see. Since Keycloak 24, you will see then non-blocking probes, and the pod will survive even under overload, and you will just see in the metric, okay, I'm now shedding some load, some of the requests going to 503, but you won't get cycling restarts, which will then break your system. So load shedding is no part of Keycloak as well. With 26 or 27, we might have even a more elaborate load shedding, but that depends if Quarkus, they're building a more like they're building a better load balancing system that will look at the regular response times, and if they would go up, it would then start shedding load automatically based on the regular response times of the system. It's a bit of hard to guess there, but let's see if people will like it. Multi-site support, what I talked about before. So we will have in Keycloak 24, which came out beginning of the year, you will have a load that works to come out. You will have a browser going to the primary site, the active site, with Keycloak, and then it will work with a synchronously replicated database across the two data centers. The database will take care of user data, credentials, groups, whatever. But the sessions will be stored in InfiniSpan, in memory only, and those will be synchronously replicated between the two sites. And then you can, we put them into InfiniSpan because you have more control that you can disable the synchronization between the two. You can resync some data from one site to another. On failback, all these things are part of InfiniSpan setups there as well. And we deliver that with blueprints, so you can really follow a guide step by step how to set this up and know about all the configuration details. And you don't, if you previously were forced to go very deep into the InfiniSpan documentation to how to set this up, this is now part of the Keycloak documentation as an opinionated guide how to do this with some tested defaults that should work well for this. The requirement is still that you have a low latency network between these two sites because we chose to do synchronous replication so the two sites are always up to date. So that you, if you log in on one site, you will be also, the data about your session will be on the second side as well, so you will be logged in on the other side as well. The same as with logout, so if you log out in the primary site, you will be also logged out on the secondary side, which is sometimes even more important for the people than the other way around. Yeah, and at least in Keycloak 24, we restricted it to active-passive to avoid potential deadlocks in InfiniSpan. Looking a bit ahead, in Keycloak 26, we then finally support active-active as well. That's okay, you will not like it? Okay. Good. But those improvements and those tests that we did for the multi-site support, they are not only for those setups. Like the sizing guide, which came out of a lot of load testing and chaos testing, about how many memory, how much CPU, how many threads you need, the sizing guide will benefit everyone, not only those running multi-site setups. And also these simplifications for a typical external InfiniSpan setup. We started out with a very long guide in Keycloak 23 with lots of unsupported options in Keycloak, and then in 24 it was kind of half the size. It was only supported options, and we expected to bring it down even more for 26. We have automated load tests and automated failure tests that we did there, especially for load shedding and others. There's also no protection against cache stampedes. So the thing is, if you bring up a new pod, it will not have all the data that is in the database. It will have empty caches when it starts up. And when there are multiple requests coming in, they all want to go to the database. Keycloak might then kind of stall or be very slow at the beginning. So we prevented this by sending only one of the threads, fetching the data from a database, and then all the other requests will use that data returned by this first call to the database to accept, for example, get the realm information, get the client information. So you will have a lot better experience when doing rolling updates of Keycloak in your setups due to this. Aurora PostgreSQL multi-AZ support is now officially in. We also describe how to add the JDBC wrapper for Aurora in there into Keycloak. That's all part of the description now. So if you're a fan of AWS services, this might be for you as well. A lot of hardening happened to InfiniSpan and Ray groups. So if you maybe experience some lockups on Keycloak restarts, those should be gone now after all this chaos testing we did with InfiniSpan for Keycloak 24. New topic, declarative user profile, which was part of Keycloak 24. The short nutshell thing is we added a form builder to Keycloak. So the thing is you usually have an LDAP or some other directory which has lots of user attributes. And the regular ones are username, email address, first name, last name. But each organization adds then a lot of other attributes to your Keycloak setup. And the new thing is you can really define those attributes, manage those attributes, the attribute types to say. Say, okay, I have username, email, first name, last name, and maybe 15 more. I want to localize those for different languages. I want to get validators in there, how long they could be, are they prohibited characters, put in regular expressions if I want to. I can also give a permission who can edit this information. Can it be edited by the user or can it only be in the admin console or who can view this information? So you can really now hide information that is never shown to an admin and never editable by an admin, some things that are only visible by an admin but can't be edited. All this is now part of Keycloak and should make the life easier for a lot of users. And this was now the configuration part, and this is now how it looks in the admin UI. Not so much surprising, but it's really formatted. You can group them, you have tabs in there. Our UI people did a great job there. The same fields you have in the admin UI are then also part of the registration screen. So once you configured your attributes and the order of them, they're part of the self-registration for users. Same validations, same descriptions, same localizations. And they're also part of the account UI where the users then can edit them. Some fields are required, others are not required. All this form builder experience is now consistent for the admin, for user registration and user self-management. Everyone tried this out before? Yeah, you're using it? Great. Okay, it works. Thank you. Good. Right. So that was Keycloak 24. Let's move on to Keycloak 25. Not so many questions, so making a lot of, yeah. The question was, what if I add a field and this field might be required at some point? You can have a required action to update your user profile with required fields. You can also make it that if you log in for a specific application called client, that then a specific field is required for that application. For example, that you can do incremental profiling in a way like, maybe I don't need your email address unless you log into this application and then ask for your email address. Or maybe your telephone number is required once you go for this other application. Okay.
Do you have certain applications, for example, Nextcloud, some templates or suggestions for how to configure a platform for Keycloak?
Yeah, so the question was, do we have suggestions how to configure applications like Nextcloud for Keycloak? At some point, we were hoping for the other way around. Nextcloud would document how to connect to Keycloak. The Keycloak team is, we say, at least too small to maintain this in a consistent way. So I know there's an Ansible playbook collection for different applications. Maybe Nextcloud is one of those, but I'm not sure. So there will be a great community project. So, but there's nothing the Keycloak project maintains on its own about this. Okay, the question was, if I do a user registration there, will it go to just a Keycloak's internal database or also to the other stores that I might have configured? It will go to the user store that you have configured. It will even go to LDAP. We were discussing that at our booth here. So it would probably end up in one specific DN in your LDAP. It wouldn't be able to put that into the right group or have a specific whatever long DN that you want to have there. But the basic stuff should work even with LDAP. Like, yes, it will store it in LDAP, is the answer. It's the same it would be with the user password reset, everything. If you choose LDAP for users, then it will store them in LDAP. Yeah, the question was, what happens if a user registers, but I want to really approve them afterwards and make sure that it's really maybe a real person and maybe check their whatever before I want to grant them access. There's no workflow that's part of Keycloak, and I think this question came up earlier at our booth here as well. The thing you can do, you can create them with a limited number of permissions, and then only after after you reviewed them manually, add the other permissions. So maybe they have, an example we talked about before is maybe they only have read access to a wiki unless they are promoted to also have write access by adding some more permissions to it. But that's outside of Keycloak, and the thing we discussed at our booth was maybe have an event listener listening for their new registrations, or you maybe give them a role saying this is a new user role, and then you have like somebody who goes in or a polling process that goes to the directory and sees, okay, there are like 5 new users who have this new user role, and I have to decide to accept them, remove them, promote them to another role, and this made your workflow management, poor man's workflow management, by adding a dummy role to them. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I didn't have the order here, but give it a start. Yeah, the question was, is there also an API I can use to register users? Yes, the admin UI we've seen is basically a web front end for a REST API. So you can have a REST API and creating a user there without the need to use this registration process there. Well, if you can do Java, yes, probably, with some knowledge. It should be easier than it is today, but still, it's doable. Another thing that comes up with organizations, which is also part of Keycloak 25, is that you can have, well, organizations are basically, but you have one big realm and you have groups for different companies, basically. That would be the simplest explanation of organizations. And for organizations, we have an invite workflow that you can tell this is an email address, first name, last name. Keycloak will then send out an email with a link so people can then register for that organization. So that might be also like a pre-approved person that will then end up in this organization. And if you're a part of the organization, you will have automatically that kind of permissions to access this or the other application. Yeah, that's maybe another thing that could help you in your setup. Okay, but it's, yeah, it's preview. And we love to hear your feedback because we want to make it, hopefully, fingers crossed, fully supported in 26. So now is a good time to give feedback for organizations.
Yeah. So you just mentioned that there's the new organization feature. Is it actually new or did I just miss that?
The question was, is the organization's feature a new feature? Yes, it's new. It's new in 25 as a preview. The question was, is it intended to be multi-tenant setups? The answer is basically yes, or at least B2B and B2B2C setups to support that kind of thing. That's the idea. Hopefully I get the order right. Yeah. So the question was, is there a way to integrate an existing database with an existing database schema for users and other things? So there is there's a repository called Keycloak Quick Starts, and you will have the bare minimum described in there how to do that. But we don't provide a plugin where you just type in the SQL, paste some SQL commands in there, and it will just work. So we will provide a kind of a blueprint, I'd say, how to write such an extension for your specific database and how to set it up. That's part of Keycloak Quick Starts. You're welcome.
Is this open registry, is there possible to have some kind of shared secrets? So for instance, if you would have a public instance, mm-hmm. and now you would have a code, whatever, that you share only with the audience here of this talk, so not yeah. 10,000 random bots register a new account, and then you have to remove most of them, but approve only three, but mm-hmm. the other way around, so we'll have some kind of entry barrier for the
website. You were asking for maybe a voucher code so that a group of people can register after a specific event. We don't have that as of today. The closest thing was then inviting single users with a specific link, and then this link will be specific to the email address that you invited. Lots of good questions. All right. Let's proceed to Keycloak 25. Keycloak 25 came out in, June? Was it June? End of May? Early June, I think. So it contained Argon 2 password hashing. So if you are following the OWASP recommendations, they were increasing the number of password hash iterations for PBFR2, this password hashing algorithm that you should apply because you should not store your passwords in clear text. And Argon 2 is then more memory based or memory heavy, so it doesn't need so many hashing iterations. That would be the very simple explanation to that. So you can have, if you add a little bit more memory to Keycloak, you will use a lot less CPU when you have lots of people logging in at the same time. I hope that makes sense, what I just said. So it's then more CPU efficient and a little bit more memory hungry, but the memory hungry is okay. We did a lot of tests there, tuned in Java garbage collection. Is anybody in here from the Bouncy Castle project, maybe, or associated with them? We have a pull request open to optimize it a bit more. So if you reach out to us, that would be great. Yeah, because we saw that Argon 2 is doing a lot of, putting a lot of memory pressure on the garbage collection of the JVM, because each iteration will allocate a new memory buffer. And we would love to see Argon 2 implementation in Bouncy Castle to maybe reuse its memory buffer and then put not so much memory pressure on the JVM garbage collection. Anyway, Okay, maybe if somebody knows somebody who knows somebody who working for the Bouncy Castle project, that would be great. Simplified host name configuration. So we saw that communities struggling with setting up Keycloak behind a reverse proxy a lot of times. So that the host name that is then visible in the browser matches the host name that Keycloak thinks it's using. So for example, to do all the redirects for applications, to creating the tokens that also have an issue in there, to have all this properly configured. So it has hopefully improved with the version 2 API here. We'd love to hear your feedback about this. We also heard from the community that, well, whenever you upgraded Keycloak before Keycloak 25, well, you could try a rolling upgrade and keep your sessions, but sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't work. Because we never guaranteed that we would be able to read the sessions that we were storing in memory from a previous version. But now with Keycloak 25, you can opt into a preview feature that we will be storing those user sessions in a database. So this is then the way that you can do upgrades of Keycloak to another version, even shutting down your whole clusters, and people will still be logged in. So you don't need to do this workaround of using offline sessions, which have a very difficult, well, people used it in the past to keep users logged in even if they were doing upgrades. But offline sessions are something very different. So they are tended to use with maybe mobile apps or something like this that are really staying logged in for a very long time, and there's even staying logged in if the user logs out in the browser. So that's offline sessions, but offline sessions shouldn't be used for keeping users logged in across upgrades. So now we have persistent user sessions as a preview feature, hopefully no longer preview in 26, but fully supported. Passkeys got even better. And yeah, you will find that you will have a separate management port for health and metrics, something I was pushing for a long time. So it makes things a lot so much simpler to implement in a Kubernetes or any other environment, that you have one port for your health and your metrics and pulling all that, and the other port you can then share with your users where they can log in and do the other stuff. Finally, it's separated. Organizations, as I talked earlier, they are now preview. I have a slide for that as well. And we're now on OpenJDK 21. So organizations, it's another tab somewhere. You enable the feature on the command line. You will create a new realm. In the new realm, you say this realm should support organizations. And then you will have another tab called organizations. Here are my organizations. I can create a new organization, and I associate it with one or more email domains. So when somebody logs in registers with a specific email address, they will be associated with that organization, and or they will be forwarded to a specific identity provider I configured for that email domain. So that there has been in previous versions and extensions to Keycloak in the Formnik community, and now you can do this in Keycloak as well. And what I can then do here is basically have attributes for an organization. So I can have members, I can add in existing members from the realm, or I can invite new members by email address and first name, last name, and then they will get a link, and then they will be pre-approved to join this organization. And I can then create one or more identity providers to add, well, I first add them to this realm, and then I associate identity providers. Could it be like, it could be Google, it could be GitHub, it could be Entra ID. I can add them here for these users, so they would be forwarded automatically to this one identity providers or multiple to choose from. So that's organizations, and we really, really love to have your feedback. We want to make that supported in 26, and we can only make it supported in 26 if we get your feedback, and to either figure out it's working for you, I think we want to hear that, because that's one of the prerequisites to make it really fully supported. Or you tell us something is not working yet, and describe the use case, and then we can understand how and to implement this. Right. So that's 26. 26 was planned to come out end of August, But now if you look into the milestones on the GitHub repository, you will see it's scheduled for end of September. The reason for that, we are waiting for the Quarkus 3.15 release, which should be out around that time. So let's see if that holds good on this one. We did a lot of internal reworkings on InfiniSpan. So as you might know, Keycloak embeds InfiniSpan to do the to manage caches, to send back and forth session information. And we're now changing this to ProtoStream, which is actually protocol buffers below. So this will allow us to do more seamless upgrades from one version to another to ensure that those schema changes we're doing are then compatible. Also, the external InfiniSpan will be using ProtoStream as well. So if you, in the past, tried to look into the external InfiniSpan and were unable to decipher the data which is stored in there, now the InfiniSpan UI will show you the data that is stored in the different entities in the caches. Again, we are waiting for 3.15 of the Quarkus team, which will be included in there. Persistent user sessions is planned to be enabled by default and fully supported. And as I said earlier, we're supporting, well, we're planning to support active mode. So yeah, it makes it a lot simpler to configure your load balancer. It makes it a lot simpler to switching one over from one side to another. Still, if you configure your clusters that are running on 90% capacity on both active sites, you will have a problem if you want to fail up from one side to another. So you still need to have this capacity in place to make sure that you either scale up the other side automatically or have it provisioned in a way that it will handle the load seamlessly when you switch over. In the past, people have been struggling a lot with Keycloak admin user recovery. So you have this maybe only one admin in there, and you forgot the password, or maybe you put in a second factor that you lost. And it was a difficult way, and not a documented way, to recover the admin user. Now there's a documented way where you can create a temporary admin user, which is there for, I believe, some minutes, or that you can then use to get into Keycloak again and reset, for example, or make the original admin user working again by whatever means necessary, either removing a second factor or setting a new password, all that. So people have been struggling with that a lot in the community, and for Keycloak 26, this is now finally, hopefully, solved in a better way. We are then supporting OpenTelemetry tracing support in a preview version. OpenTelemetry, I will show a screenshot in a second. And we finally then are removing legacy cookies. So all our cookies, well, we originally had a set of cookies which were not setting the same site information to support all the browsers that were not handling that very well. Now we say all browsers are handling the same site cookies in a good way. And now we're removing the legacy cookies, which means you would have less needs to configure the maximum HTTP header sizes in your reverse proxy, for example, if you struggled with that in the past. So basically, you will have, due to the cookies, I'd say probably half the size of the HTTP headers in total. Let's see, fingers crossed, hopefully it works as expected. We were just finishing those tests last week. But it should be good now. Organizations continued. Again, we love to hear your feedback about this to make it fully supported in Keycloak 26. The team is working very, very actively on this. So please raise a bug issue. This is how OpenTelemetry tracing can look like. So the gist is you will have a request coming in, and in this very preview version, you will see all the database calls that are being done here. So all the select, update, whatever statements been done here. You will have an idea why this request was so slow and give you an indication, for example, to increase your cache sizes. We hope that we will be able to integrate, for example, any other call to external systems as well, like calls using HTTP or calls using LDAP, that those would be in there as well. But that's then the next step for now. Well, that is what is in the Keycloak's nightly build, which will, I'd say, definitely be in Keycloak 26. all the other things, they need a bit more work and might make it in 26 or might make it in a future release then. Right, so that was what's planned for KeyCloud 26. Let's have a look at conferences and events. So there's KeyConf 24, there's an OpenID Connect special interest group in the KeyCloud community. They're meeting once a year, and this year they're meeting in Vienna. And I'm one of those who were trying to do an online stream for that as well, because the event on-site is sold out. So please join our online stream, and we also hope to have the possibility to ask questions there in the online stream. There's QCon North America as a CNCF project. The KeyCloud project is there usually as well, with talks also from others from the community. This year it's in Salt Lake City, North America, and the next one in early April is going to be in London. And we'll also have a booth there at the KubeCon North America. There's a KeyCloud Dev Day. It's been a great success this year. The organizers brought together a lot of people who are developing extensions, running KeyCloud instances. So very, I'd say, knowledgeable people came there to participate there to discuss in a one-day event. Next year, it's going to be in Darmstadt. That's about half an hour drive from Frankfurt. So if you fly in, and it's still a good opportunity to get to know a lot of KeyCloud people. So at the moment, then you're running a call for papers. So the call for papers will run, I don't know, maybe another 2 or 3 weeks at least. And please submit your sessions there or ideas, or make others to submit their sessions there. There's also an online meetup I'm running, KeyCloud Hour of Code. We're about to meet tomorrow, actually, at 4 o'clock CEST time. And we'll be discussing how to better run KeyCloud in production. So if anybody is interested in that, please join us as well. Right. Where to meet KeyCloud? There's the homepage of KeyCloud, where you also find other links. There's also, if you click on the community, there's a discourse forum, there's a GitHub discussions, there's mailing lists. You find us also on the CNCF Slack channels, one for KeyCloud users, and KeyCloud Dev for KeyCloud developers and contributors. The OAuth special interest group is there as well. Right. So a lot of things and ways to integrate or to, communicate with us. Even more links here, maybe to point out the KeyCloud Lite release here. So this is a lighter release where all the latest features are in that you can run you can't upgrade from a nightly to a nightly, you can't upgrade from nightly to a release, but they're supposed to be run on an empty database to get us feedback to try it out. Please do that, and this is really the easiest way to try out these KeyCloud 26 features and figure out if maybe a bug that you're seeing today is already fixed in a nightly release. Right, and that's me. Reach out with questions after the talk. We're here with our kiosk or booth. There are a lot of stickers there. There are postcards. And I'm happy to answer all your questions over there after this talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pardon. Thank you very much for your talk. We have about 7 more minutes for questions, if you have any.
So thank you. Haven't used KeyCloud before, so this will probably be a more beginner question, but it sounds absolutely awesome. Let's say I have all my services running behind a reverse proxy who takes care of the TLS termination. What does KeyCloud do?
Okay, so you have options there. So what you can do, you can do TLS pass-through if you want to. So you have SNI, server name indication in there, and then the reverse proxy will know where to send the request, the TLS connection, and then KeyCloud will terminate the TLS connection for you. The other alternative is that you do either termination in your proxy, and then hopefully re-encrypt your connection again going to KeyCloud. And if you do this way, if you terminate your TLS connection in the reverse proxy, it will give you the opportunity to filter out maybe some malicious HTTP headers. For example, if you would say you want to enable open telemetry tracing and you don't want to allow open telemetry tracing headers from the internet, but only from internal networks, this will give you the opportunity to filter out those headers. So it's really a trade-off. Both can work for you, but you need to figure it out for your environment, for example. Or if you want to filter out special URLs that shouldn't be reachable from the internet, like the admin UI, only from internals, then you might terminate the TLS connection in your reverse proxy.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
Where would I see or find sort of bleeding edge features? Let's say, for example, if I want to test, if you have it already, like FedCM support, federated credential management stuff, the stuff Google is playing around with, or verifiable credential support and all this stuff.
Yeah, so these features you were talking about are those who are actively discussed in the OpenID Connect special interest working group of Keycloak. There was a link here. I'd say you join their discussion. Well, if you go to, there's a Slack channel on the CNCF Slack, and you can browse what they're discussing there or ask your questions there. Verifiable credential is something they're currently working on. I believe there is, what we didn't do, we'll have a GitHub issue of type Epic, which will have a to-do list with lots of tickets that we want to implement to get this feature implemented. And you, with those epics, you will be able to track the progress on those as well. The same was for persistent sessions. We also had an epic there with lots of subtasks that we were then tracking. Yeah. That's some of the answer. I'm not so much on the OIDC. I'm more like running Keycloak on the backend side, but that's part of the answer probably. Yeah, all those features are for this special interest group, and they have their own GitHub repository with also meeting minutes they share. They share the recordings of the meetings they have. And especially as the event in Vienna, they have part of their like
the sold out event,
but it will be online. And you, if you go to the site today, you will see part of the program already announced. I believe they will announce the next set of speakers hopefully next week. So you will see that there are a lot of focus on the OIDC stuff, and that's where we get the answers on the cutting edge stuff.
Just a technical question. What was the reason to put down the whitefly and switch?
Well, we want to have it more lightweight. We're still, well, it might have not worked out so much for the memory, but it really worked out for the startup times. So we're now down to startup times of maybe 5 seconds, depending on your setup, on your machines. Like at least on my laptop, it starts in 5 seconds, put it this way. And that's improved a lot. Also the configuration, it was very, I'd say, Java specific with the JBoss application server CLI, a lot of XML files to tune. I think this is more using more common approaches that are more common in the community to run things maybe on Kubernetes or other or bare metal. It's not so Java specific anymore, from looking at it from the outside at least. Okay, I think last question for today.
Yeah, thank you. Seeing the mostly this is logins being taken care of in a web browser, so how well would this work with having a Keycloak backend and getting the graphical Linux login integrated and having that Linux graphical login passing on a token to make sure that all your browser sessions are logged in as well in all the web applications? Would that work? And if so, are there any tutorials, documentations, whatever? I didn't find any, so yeah, that's why I'm asking.
So the short answer to that is there was a track on FOSDEM earlier this year, and there were at least one or maybe two talks in there how to integrate FIDO keys, for example, and other things to logins into there. And like, I'm not a desktop person, I say, or so, but that was a great track with a lot of information on this one.
I think I can say something to this. Ubuntu has in the current release an external repo, it's on GitHub, it's called OutD. With this, they try to authenticate the user against common OAuth services like Entra and so on. It's a little bit modular. And I think it should be possible if you authenticate the people there, you can put something in their home directory, session injection to browse or something, but later step, it's not production in the moment and still a little bit flaky.
All right, I think we came to the end of the hour. Thanks for joining this session and see you at the booth.